Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Hello, I'm Dave Williams, and a very warm welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu, a regular look at technology from a blindness perspective. Main Menu is first heard on ACB Radio Mainstream every Wednesday at 1 Universal. And just to remind people that this coming weekend, the final weekend in October in the United States, the clocks will be going back 1 hour, which will mean next week's Main Menu will start at the early time of 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. And will remain at that time throughout the US winter. Coming up on Main Menu this week, we feature a Tuesday topics discussion led by Paul Edwards, former president of the American Council of the Blind, discussing the Assistive Technology Act.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Tuesday Topics. Tuesday Topics is an opportunity for those of us interested in issues that concern people who are blind and visually impaired to discuss those issues among ourselves, to share our opinions and views. Tuesday Topics is made possible because of the support of Talking Communities that makes these chat rooms available on our ACB Radio website. And we appreciate the efforts of Talking Communities to make this space available to us so that we can enhance our ability to discuss and understand a range of issues that are out there. Tuesday Topics has also now become an ACB Radio program. At the moment, as you will see as we go on tonight, you will hear many of the same folks we've heard in the past, but that's just because others of you haven't turned up yet. Please feel free to come any Tuesday evening to the Tuesday Topics area by going to ACB Radio, then going to the Our Place segment, then going to the Rooms list, then going to the Politics room. Try to do so sometime before the show actually starts and find a friend who can go there with you so you can test your mic to make sure that it works okay before our show is actually done live at 9 on Tuesday evenings. Last week, we decided that we were going to discuss this week what is usually called the Tech Act. Its actual title is the Assistive Technology Act, and the latest version is known as H.R. 4278, and it has actually been passed by the House of Representatives in the version which included some amendments from the Senate, and has now gone to President Bush for his signature. At this point, I am not aware that President Bush has yet signed the Assistive Technology Act of 2004, but would anticipate that he will sign it, since the bill is pretty straightforward. We'll get into a bunch more detail later about what the differences between the 2004 Act and the earlier Assistive Technology Acts are. But for now, let's talk just for a moment about Assistive Technology Act's major purpose and go around and see whether anybody has had an opportunity to explore what the Assistive Technology Acts have done in their particular states, because that's the core thing about the Assistive Technology Acts. They started in 1988 and have existed continuously since then. In other words, they've been around for the last 16 years. And the purpose of the Assistive Technology Act was to enable states to apply for grants that would specifically improve access to assistive technology for people with disabilities within the state. And various states have operated various projects under the Assistive Technology Act. What do you think an Assistive Technology Act grant in a state ought to do to try to make access technology more widely available to folks with disabilities. Let's open that up as a question to start.
Hi, this is Rachel from Orlando, and I'm sorry to say, even having been in access technology for a while, I'm relatively unfamiliar with the Act. But working still in the blindness field, where I see is a problem. You have situations where agencies will pay for access technology for people who are working, or you can also get some of that access technology if you meet a certain economic standard. So you have a group of people that maybe might fall into that a little bit higher economic base than some of the other people that could normally get the access technology that aren't able to purchase any of the technology. So there's kind of that gray area of people who aren't really easily served through any of the other programs. And I don't know if this is something that could work for some of those people or not. But that's where I see, where I come across, is a certain group of people that make or that have too much to be able to be under one program and not enough to be under another.
Cool. Thanks. So one of the purposes of a tech act in a state ought to be to provide some kind of a mechanism to enable people who don't qualify for the purchase of access technology by agencies to acquire that technology. Cool. What other things ought an Access Technology Act program in a state do? Janelle, what are your thoughts perhaps from Kansas?
Well, I think I agree that making it accessible to people, such as the TAPS program here in Kansas that helps people with providing accessible phone equipment in various ways and helps provide information about other types of services that are available in various formats. And I unfortunately I had a very nice week, but unfortunately, as far as doing the homework for this evening, was out of town for most of this week as far as finding out more of this information as far as currently what is available for the Tech Act here in Kansas. But I'm eager to learn more about the Tech Act in general.
Well, I will have to admit that I don't really know much about what all the Tech Act is involved with, especially near in Michigan. But I feel that access technology is important for blind people because we need to know a lot about how to use computers and how to use the things that are how to make things accessible for blind people, and especially for those who. For those who are employed, you know, like I've been retired for several years, but for those who need employment, I think it's going to take a lot of access technology to skills to learn for people to have jobs in the future, I think.
Thanks, Gary. Well, I think you guys have certainly hit on some of the elements that the Tech Act's focused on. Some of the better Access Tech Act programs in states did, in fact, focus on trying to put access technology into the hands of folks with disabilities. Some of the other projects that they tried to get underway was to assure that people with disabilities actually knew what access technology could do. So one of the things that these programs actually did was to go around the state and provide a lot of training to folks with disabilities on what stuff is available, as well as to employers and agencies and state stakeholders. They also, as they should have, sometimes engaged in advocacy services with regard to assistive technology. That is, if they felt that an individual had a right to expect an agency to provide access technology, they might get involved in that case. Or, as more often happened, they would attempt to impact state law by creating a class of devices that ought to be made available under state law. For instance, in Florida, the FAST program worked with the Advocacy Center for People with Disabilities several years ago to create a case that said that Medicaid ought to provide augmentative communication devices for kids who needed them, and were able to persuade Medicaid to regard augmentative communication devices as appropriate medical equipment, what was called durable medical equipment in the jargon of the case. And that's a huge step forward, because in most states, and of course in the federal government as well, there are very few devices that are pretty expensive and that aren't things like wheelchairs that are kind of easily understood, that that have been recognized and validated as appropriate assistive technology for Medicaid to buy. So the advocacy role was another important one. Also, the creation of demonstration sites became a really important issue, and many of the tech acts actually set up regional demonstration programs, and often entered into subcontracts with community-based organizations that already existed, so that those organizations would in fact create and provide opportunities for people with disabilities to have a place where they could go and play with access technology products, because the Tech Act demonstration sites would actually buy access tech products and make them available there at the demonstration sites, so that people would actually have an opportunity to try these products out before they made a decision on what they ought to buy. So those are some of the things that Tech Act programs did. Does anybody have any other thoughts about what they might have done, or what perhaps they could have or should have done?
To sell people on assistive technology, they need to know as much as possible about what all assistive technology can do for them, and how it can meet their needs.
Yep, that's a good point, Gary. And one of the interesting things that Tech Act projects have often done a good job at making certain of is that people recognize that there are choices. One of the problems with access technology is that the markets are relatively small, but there are also companies of various sizes. In some cases, a company in a particular access tech arena might have a pretty substantial portion of the market in a given state for whatever reason. Let's take, for an example, Freedom Scientific and JAWS. There certainly has been an argument that Freedom Scientific and JAWS, because of their marketing, because of the size of the company, because of the efforts that they've made, and because of the degree to which agencies are interested in getting a single kind of program, has become almost a monopoly in some states in terms of the kinds of screen readers that are bought. And the Access Technology Act, by allowing the states to provide access to 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 screen reading programs in their demonstration sites, has actually enabled folks who are blind, who took advantage of the Tech Act demonstration sites, to get a better idea of what the other alternatives in terms of screen readers look like, which is a good thing.
I'm thinking that some training could possibly be part of that. Just thinking of the situation with Freedom Scientific and JAWS, I know that some state agencies have purchased JAWS mainly because there were people around to support it and to train on it, and it wasn't necessarily a situation of just being easily accessible or available. You know, it was just a matter of being able to have the support and the training available to train their clients on any of the other screen readers or OCR programs available.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think one of the areas where some of us have been disappointed with many of the Assistive Technology Act state grant programs has been in the degree to which they didn't provide this training. Now, many of them argued, and perhaps they have a point, that that ought not really to be their function, because their function was primarily to create an infrastructure within the state where an understanding of the availability of assistive technology products was being fostered, where a clear notion of the kinds of products that are out there was being fostered, and where specific underserved populations were being identified in their reports. In Florida, obviously, that was people who were older. And their view was that they have quite enough to do in publicizing and setting up sites, in figuring out ways to perhaps create programs that create access to assistive technologies for these underserved populations, and don't have time and really believe that's not their job, to teach people how to use assistive technology. Some of us don't agree. Some of us think that it actually would have been pretty cool if there could have been more training programs made available.
I'm even thinking of like a train-the-trainer kind of situation, not even necessarily the end user, but maybe even a program, something that would focus in on all of the screen readers, or at least the majority of the main ones being used, or you know, something that would allow the trainers to get all the information they needed to allow the end user to make their informed decisions.
Cool. I think you're actually right, Rachel, that this would have represented a good direction. Before we go any further, let me provide folks with a little bit of information, and this is not going to be absolutely perfect information, because I've only had a relatively short time to do the work that I wanted to do. But if you go to a website that all of us should become pretty familiar with, because it's a very cool website, which is www.disability.gov, there is a link on the homepage for technology. Now, there are lots of cool elements in technology that you can look at under this heading, but finding what I wanted was really hard, and you actually have to look under RESNA, which is the Rehabilitative Engineering Society of North America. And under RESNA, there is, among other things, a listing of the 56 currently funded grants in access technology or assistive technology. And virtually all of them have both email addresses, the name of the executive director, addresses, phone numbers, and what is cool, websites. I think that actually people could gain an awful lot in terms of trying to make determinations about what their individual states ought to be considering over the next few years by taking a look at some of these websites. So I wanted to let folks know that, in fact, these resources are out there. And, of course, on various government websites, you can find the act itself for 2004, though, of course, it's still not an act until it's signed, so it's still known as H.R. 4278. And there's also a committee report that provides a good deal more explanation in some of the new directions of the act than the law itself does. And so I would urge you guys to perhaps take a look at that if you are interested.
Wouldn't it be good to look at these websites to then we can come forth with ideas that the states can use to help improve their access technology programs and training for the disabled in the state?
Yep. I think you're right, Mr. Gary. So let's at least go on to talk a little bit about the Assistive Technology Act of 2004. Well, we said that these laws have existed since 1988, and when a new round was passed in 1998, after the first cycle of funding had been completed, a decision was made to extend the program, but not a lot of changes were made at the time. I think that in some of the reports that surrounded the 1998 legislation, there was certainly some indication to state grantees that they needed to look at some different models, and they'd really spent enough time doing some of the things that they were continuing to do year after year. But not very much change happened. And so when the Access Technology Act of 2004 was sent to President Bush for his signature, it contains some novel elements and some elements that may actually have the potential of meeting precisely the issues that Rachel raises. The Assistive Technology Act of 2004 says essentially, okay, states, you've had 16 years to develop infrastructures, you've had 16 years to inform people with disabilities about assistive technology, you've had 16 years to create systems where you've got cool websites where your state is aware of what its obligations are under this law and under Section 508. So now it's necessary to make some changes, if we can, in the law so as to make it more equitable for people with disabilities in general. And what the 2004 law says is that at least 60% of the funds that are allocated to the state grant have to be spent to directly place into the hands of people with disabilities assistive technology devices. So, Ms. Rachel, does that seem like a good direction?
I certainly think that helps, because there is definitely some areas where I think people could benefit from these kind of funding, because I've seen it where I've dealt with some people who really could benefit from the technology, and it's just not because of funding. It's just not available to them. So then they either have to just do without it or try to find alternatives or try to come up with creative ways of raising the incredible amount of money that it would take to purchase some of this stuff. So it certainly would help.
Well, of course, it's one thing to have a law that demands that access technology be provided, but I'm wondering about these mandates. I wonder if they're unfunded mandates, or is there any federal money involved in assuring that this gets done?
Oh yeah, Gary, the Tech Act has actually been pretty well funded. My recollection is that the recommended budgetary level for 2005 is $22 million. So that doesn't create a huge amount of funding for the each individual state. But what it does do pretty clearly it does allow them to create an environment where they can build some infrastructure to make some of the things that the Act wants happen. Okay, so 60% of the money has to be spent on making assistive technology directly available to people with disabilities. Fine. The question is, how do you do that? Should you just give people an outright grant? Is that an appropriate way to spend money or an appropriate way to provide technology? What do people think? Is it?
Instead of a grant, I don't know, I think the money should go into training, I guess, probably training people how to use the equipment, and maybe training people how to train people if that's what's needed, I guess.
I think there needs to be some kind of conditions. You know, you want to be able to spend this grant money wisely. And I would want to see that informed choices were made, that the technology that's being put into the hands of the end user is actually what's going to be most beneficial for them, and that they are going to be able to use it. So I'm not sure exactly how this would happen, but I think that there needs to be some... It can't be freely given. I think there needs to be some kind of conditions on that.
In fact, the Tech Act does not allow for any grants. What it does allow for are the creation of some specific kinds of systems, and it also encourages states to look at the creation of alternative approaches. But the three primary approaches that are recommended in the Tech Act of 2004 are low-interest loans, which are guaranteed by the Tech Act. And I think that's really important, because I think it would probably be true to say that many people with disabilities, because of their low income and for a variety of other reasons, won't qualify for many bank loans. And therefore, it's really important for there to be some kind of a system in place that would allow them to get a guaranteed loan with a reasonable credit history at low interest that would actually enable them to acquire the assistive technology that they need. So that's one method. The second method is, interestingly enough, one that we tried here in Florida, though it wasn't under the FAST program. It was a project that the Division of Blind Services got underway in the 1980s, and that was to create a revolving fund. There's some real advantages to doing this, because if you can get the state to allocate a pretty large chunk of change, that chunk of change, while it's still there, can earn some money. But also, you've created a pool of dollars that can be specifically used for low-interest loans, or that can be specifically used for proportional grants and a range of other options that you can look at in terms of putting assistive technology into the hands of folks with disabilities who need it. So that's the second method that's being really strongly encouraged by the ATA of 2004. And last but not least, and there are some other elements here. These are generalizations, okay? The third project that the Assistive Technology Act of 2004 in Section 4 really takes a good hard look at and suggests that states ought to really consider it is what's called an assistive technology reutilization program, which would essentially create ways of bringing in older assistive technology, refurbishing it, making sure it still works and functions well, and then developing and implementing some mechanisms that will make this now substantially more affordable equipment and software available to the disabled people of the state using, I don't know, low-interest loans, community organization grants, and a range of other things. So probably that, under Section 4, is the biggest difference in the Assistive Technology Act of 2004. But I think beyond the concerns of Section 4, which talk about the specific activities that states are supposed to engage in terms of technology and individuals with disabilities, there does continue to be several other elements that are involved in the Act and for which some funding can be made available. One of those things is advocacy. And we talked about some of the examples of that before. Another is national activities, and here there is a specific intent to create a generalized national website on assistive technology where cool new things and new programs and information about how assistive technology works and so on can be made available to people with disabilities. There's also a section on administration. And finally, there is a section that also under national activities seems to want to create enough of an infrastructure so that for the first time the process of doing annual reports to Congress on the success of this act will in fact be funded under this act. And that's actually probably a very good thing. So, I've been talking an awfully long time. Let's just for fun see whether Don, who has joined us, can make his mic work and tell us a little bit about where he's from and whether he's had any experience with the Tech Act in the state where he lives.
Yeah, my name is Don. I'm in the Houston, Texas area. And I have had just a small bit of experience with getting assistive technology for a specific work-related need, and I think if it hadn't been for that work-related need, I would have gotten absolutely nowhere.
Okay. So did you get it from the Texas Commission for the Blind then, Don?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm sorry I didn't make that clear.
Cool. Do you know anything about your Texas Tech Act program and what it's spent its time and effort doing in Texas over the last few years?
Well, actually, I know very little about it. I've probably heard more from you.
I'm fascinated by the fact that here we have a cross-section of folks who are blind and visually impaired who are pretty savvy people. And here we have a law that's been around for 16 years, and one of the primary objectives of that law is to be sure that individuals with disabilities know about access technology. And know what their state Tech Act program can do for them. And here we have a group of folks who actually know very little about the Tech Act itself and not a lot about their state programs either. And I guess my question is, does that mean that the Tech Act is a failure? Or are there other things we should point to?
I think in my situation, in my case, as you were talking, I was thinking, oh, yeah, okay, we've done that. And that's a result of the Tech Act. So I think it is working. I think it's just one of those things that I've just kind of been around for a while and done some of these things and been exposed to some of these things, but maybe just didn't quite take the time to put everything together and link everything with the Tech Act, although it makes perfect sense, actually.
Well, back in, 1988, Paul mentioned, I don't think people knew a lot about this access technology stuff back when this started up. If you look at the whole scope of things, we haven't really been using computers all that long, maybe about 10 years, maybe, I think, with starting with Windows and Windows 95, maybe NT, if anybody used that, but that's when the personal computer really came into its own last few years, so probably maybe we don't know that much about the Tech Act because some of us probably haven't been using computers all that long.
Okay. Thanks, Gary. Well, I guess I'm still fascinated because I would have expected that especially a group of pretty savvy folks like us would have had more knowledge of both the Tech Act and of the particular state Tech Act program that operates in our own individual states. And I don't know that it's a failure of the Tech Act. I'm not sure. It may be that they aren't doing enough outreach to people who are blind and visually impaired. Certainly there are some Tech Act programs that have not done a good job of that, that have focused on other elements of assistive technology, sometimes for people with developmental disabilities, sometimes for people with mobility impairments, but sometimes not doing nearly enough in dealing with doing outreach to consumers themselves. And also, too many states, in my view, have done their outreach through agencies rather than through consumer organizations. So some Tech Act programs have not done a good job of building partnerships with state organizations of people with disabilities.
Yeah, well, I think that that might be what it is. I think that that might be the key here. I think the past 20, 30 years, I think consumer organizations have come into their own, because before that, you know, you look at the state services for the blind, and they always provided the service they think that blind people should have, but then we kind of stepped up to the plate and told them what we thought, what we wanted for ourselves, you know, instead of what they thought we should have.
Cool. Okay. So we've got an idea of what the Tech Act looks like. We've also got an idea of what the 2004 version seems to do. So what do we in ACB need to do in order to maximize the benefits of the Tech Act for our folks?
We probably need to advocate stronger for services for the blind. I've now located this website, and they seem to have some equipment for other disabilities and things here in Kansas, various things listed, and for other disabilities, quite a bit more so than for the blind, it would seem. And they do have a conference, a technology conference that I knew about, that's actually in Missouri, but it's a technology conference, so I hadn't realized it had anything to do with the Tech Act, where they demonstrate screen readers and with Windows XP and all this kind of stuff. And then they have some training, some PowerPoint things that kind of have to do with disabilities, and some of these kind of PowerPoint things that you can download off of the website, and some of these kind of things. But I think just advocating for more services for the disabled, perhaps for everyone, but for people who are blind in particular, to have our concerns known, because as you said, people like me, just not being aware of this Tech Act, perhaps we're not advocating strongly enough for our issues and our needs with these particular people with the funding that they do have available.
Cool. Thanks, Janelle. I think that's a good step. I think we need to advocate more directly with these organizations. By the way, each state program is required, I think, though I'm not absolutely sure, and I didn't have time to really check on some of this, but each state act is required to have an advisory board, and there should be some pretty substantial representation of people with disabilities on these Tech Act boards or on these Tech Act advisory groups. And it might well make sense for us to be knocking the door down for the Tech Act executive directors in our state in order to see whether or not we or someone from our organization could become a part of that advisory group. I think it might be a good idea as well if we seriously considered inviting the state Tech Act executive director to our state convention to talk about what they're doing to specifically help folks who are blind or visually impaired. I know we've had folks from FAST at our state convention here in Florida in the past, but not for the last several years. And I think that part of the reason why we haven't is that some of us, anyway, were really disenchanted with the direction that the state program was going and with the degree to which it didn't seem to want to change. There's a new executive director, I notice, on Florida's website. I don't know whether I know her or not, but I think it is well worth trying to do some more investigation to try to figure out what direction FAST could legitimately go in order to meet some of the needs of our blind and visually impaired folks. ACB has in the past worked hard to get the Tech Act reauthorized, and in particular passed a number of resolutions in the mid-90s to be sure that the Tech Act of 1998 happened. I think with the 2004 version, we ought to be thankful for the fact that the Tech Act has in fact been reauthorized, because this is a chunk of change that otherwise would be going someplace else than assistive technology. But I think we have to make sure that we maximize what we can out of the assistive technology pie in our state. So I think it's very much up to each of us in the different states to become actively involved with your Tech Act program and see what it is that they may be able to do for you and what you can do with them to forward their goals. Let's deal with one final question. Should the government be involved in making assistive technology available to people, or should it be up to the private sector and charity to do that? It's a pretty good question, and different countries in the world, as well as different points of view within the United States, have responded in different ways. So should the government be involved in providing assistive technology to people with disabilities?
If the government is involved, I think probably they should. I mean, anything that the government's involved with, seems like the amount of money that you spend on this kind of thing, you should get some back on it, you know, that you should gets be an investment, you know. I mean, dollars spent should match dollars that's been received by the programs that are done.
I guess I'll put in my two cents then. I think it really is an interesting question, and I think there are a number of philosophical issues that are raised by the question. Obviously, on the one hand, because of chronic underemployment in this minority, there simply isn't the money in the disability community to buy assistive technology. And therefore, there perhaps is a role for government in creating mechanisms that will make that assistive technology more widely available, perhaps in providing the pool of dollars that could be used for low-interest loans. But on the other hand, the other side of that coin is, to what degree is the chronic low income within the disability community a direct result from the fact that, in fact, they have access to a broader range of welfare than any other population in our country does? If we add to that the capacity to get low-interest loans to acquire assistive technology, are we actually creating an environment where these individuals will, in fact, feel like without very much effort they can get what they want, and therefore perhaps won't be as encouraged as they might be to go back to work or to become more directly involved in their communities as a whole? I think it's a really hard question to answer. I tend to come down on the side of the government being involved, but I also tend to favor programs that encourage people who have slightly higher income to take advantage of low-interest loans rather than having the expectation that someone ought to buy technology for that person.
I live in Brazil, but here we have a serious problem because almost everyone can't buy assistive technology. The price is very high when the products arrive here, and I think whoever the government help these people, big number of people would have access and use the technology. It would help a lot, the independent life and the work.
Hi, Montero. We got the first part of what you sent. I think the points that you made were very strong, that in other countries, the gap between people with disabilities and the rest of the population is, in fact, much larger. But I think that Montero raises an issue that deserves our attention, and that is that in third world countries, the likelihood of disabled people getting access to the technology that they need is probably even lower, because there simply isn't the overhead available to governments to enable them to acquire the kind of technology or to have an interest in doing that for folks with disabilities. Now, at the same time as we say that, there are some really interesting situations occurring in some Asian countries, and I'll talk about a couple of those in a moment. One of the things that's that I was amazed at, because of my attitude towards developing countries, was when I talked with someone from South Korea, I was essentially informed that every household in South Korea was in effect being equipped with high-speed internet access. And the idea was that by creating high-speed internet access, you could jumpstart the ability of large segments of the population to become more literate, to become more involved with computers, and eventually, perhaps, to be more employable as they grew older. And I think there are some arguments that actually say that what some developing countries, if they can, ought to do is to try to jump over the intermediate period where many developed countries are now, and put in infrastructures for technology that will make it far easier and far less expensive for their folks to become involved with internet technology than it currently is. For instance, the cost of accessing the internet in the Caribbean has until very recently been very high, but I think there's now beginning to be some more competition, and the costs for access in the Caribbean were considerably have been considerably dropping over the last few years. But to give you an idea, the model in the Caribbean is you are charged by the number of minutes that you're online, not a flat rate per month.
Compared to the rest of the world, I mean, sometimes we think we kind of have it rough, but we probably have it a lot easier than those in other countries. And I think probably this technology could make free the world. I mean, it would really create a lot of better conditions for the world if they could get involved with it.
Yep, I think you're right, Mr. Gary. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we have about reached the point where Assistive Technology Act, though it's an exciting topic that we could spend hours and hours discussing, we have probably about spent as much time on it as we're going to this week. I'd like to thank all of you for being with us this evening, and would like to invite participants perhaps to go around with any final thoughts on Assistive Technology Act and other related elements before we say goodnight finally.
I will just satisfy your curiosity and say that Montero said he was from Brazil, so now you can put all the pieces of that together, but his connection was dropped. I think this is a great topic to get into. I say this every week, but these Tuesday topics are really enlightening, in that we're able to kind of get fired up and bring things to the state and local levels that maybe otherwise we wouldn't be able to do. I certainly admit to not being as familiar with the Tech Act as I could be or should be, and certainly if we can bring these to our local and state levels, that information, we're only going to come out better in the long run as far as getting that advocacy and working towards the things that we all want to see happen.
cool. Janelle, final thoughts on the Tech Act and related matters?
Well, this has certainly been interesting, as always, and I think whatever can be used, whether it's low-interest loans or tax credits for employers or whatever resources that we can bring to bear for technology for blind people, that to help blind people to be able to be employed or become educated or whatever, to better themselves or to learn about technology, to help blind people to be, whether they're becoming employed or becoming more full members of society, that certainly improves the quality of our members' lives and other blind people too, and is something we should strive for. And by becoming more informed about the Tech Act, hopefully we can do that.
Paul, can you give the website again? I believe one of them was disability.gov. What was that second one?
Actually, I got to all of this stuff indirectly from disability.gov. If you go to www.disability.gov, then click on technology on the homepage, and then there is a link to RESNA projects. That stands for Rehabilitative Engineering Society of North America. But it's right on that technology page, I think. But anyway, once you get on the technology page, look around. It isn't in the places where you think it ought to be. And it's not actually quite as simple to find a lot of information on the current Tech Act as I thought it was going to be. Gary, final thoughts.
Well, I think that seems like as far as not being easy to find, it seems like they ought to be able to follow their own 508 mandates and making this thing easy to find. But I think that maybe a solution could be to have the low interest loans or tax credits on these things better than maybe just having government pay you a certain amount of money to buy things for you. For training and stuff, maybe tax credits might work or low-interest loans, but that's one solution.
Thanks, Gary. Just to make a quick comment on the website, actually the website is pretty compliant. It allows various levels of graphics from high graphics to none, and it has a couple of real cool things built into it. It has the ability to translate individual web pages into Spanish, Portuguese, French, and German, and a few other languages as well, which is pretty cool. I also like the fact that it's called Babelfish from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but that's okay. So the Assistive Technology Act in the last 16 years has probably done quite a lot to spread the gospel according to assistive technology throughout the United States, including Puerto Rico and outlying territories. Clearly, from what we've said tonight, there's still an awful lot to be done. In 2004, the Tech Act has been given a new mandate, and the next generation of Tech Act-funded projects are going to have to specifically develop creative ways of putting access technology devices into the hands of individuals with disabilities. It should be exciting to see how our individual states go about trying to implement that mandate that's a part of the new act. I think that all of us should keep in touch with the Tech Act, and all of us should remain on top of what's going on in our individual states. Next week on Tuesday Topics, it will be just before elections in the United States of America. It occurred to those of us who've participated in Tuesday Topics that it might be nice to know what sorts of issues we've heard candidates talking about with regards to people with disabilities. What kinds of issues have we not heard them talking about that they should have? In making decisions about how to vote, how should people with disabilities respond to what the candidates have said? How can we encourage candidates to say more? And what should we do after elections to be sure that what candidates say is what candidates do? These are some of the questions that we'll explore next week in a Tuesday topic on the eve of the American elections that will ask the general question, where should we stand and how should we vote? Thanks for listening, everyone. Good night.
And the highlights of that discussion can be heard in a special program heard here on ACB Radio Mainstream on Monday the 1st of November at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. Sincere thanks to our contributors on Main Menu this week. And don't forget, of course, it's your program. And if you'd like to submit an item for consideration, then drop us a line, mainmenu@acbradio.org. Until next time, I'm Dave Williams. Bye for now.